Coming up on Tech News Today, we'll talk about Verizon's new shared data plans, also whether Facebook's dying, and if antivirus is already dead. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 12th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by ShareFile by Citrix. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial plus double storage. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter the promo code TNT. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small business that saves time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users and try the service free for 30 days of unlimited use at FreshBooks.com. Be sure to let them know you heard about it on Tech News Today. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news, try to make some sense of it all. Helping us make some sense today is Mr. Dan Patterson from Dan Patterson.
No, CoPoint.
From CoPoint. Well, I didn't have that written down. I'm sorry. What's the URL for CoPoint?
CoPoint. CoPoint.com.
You're in the CoPoint studio.
Yeah, I am. Very, very similar. We make radio shows, podcasts, sell ads.
It looks good. You guys are getting it together there. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's within Sumall, which is Dane Atkinson. You know Dane from the Squarespace days. Right, it's within Sumall's office here. And it turns out Chuck D, Public Enemy, Rick Rubin, LL Cool J all made records right here in this very space. So
I was hoping you were going to say they're all right there right now. Like, all right.
Yeah, anyway, right, it's just a privilege. I get to make podcasts where legendary stuff was once.
Yeah, that's awesome. Every time we see you, the studio is looking better and better. That's really exciting. We got some good stuff to talk about. We're going to talk to Dan about the Flame virus and what it means for antivirus protection. We're going to talk about the new Verizon plans. But first, the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Here's the details on those Verizon plans. They'll come out June 28th, exciting lots of people. Maybe. Customers pay from $10 to $40 a month for each device in the plan, then buy a data plan that's shared amongst all those devices. That includes unlimited text and voice. The shared data plans are an additional $50 for 1 gigabyte a month, up to 10 gigabytes per month for $100.
Amazon's introduced its Cloud Player app for iOS, so not only can you play music stored in the Amazon Cloud Drive, but also from your local library. For a limited time, Amazon's going to offer unlimited space for MP3 and AAC files for anyone who purchases their storage plans, or 5 gigabytes of storage for free for all customers. And at least for now, no ability to actually buy music through the app, because of course Amazon wasn't going to share its pile of money with Apple.
And you can't play it offline either. I tried.
Well, more depressing news, but this time for HTC. The International Trade Commission says you cannot use those patents you borrowed from Google to defend yourself against Apple's complaint. Now, Apple successfully argued that only Google had the rights to assert those patents, and HTC didn't have proper standing since HTC did not acquire all substantial rights to those patents. The decision can be appealed if HTC chooses.
It's not going to get any better from here on out either, too. Mike Elgin has uncovered link fighting between Facebook and Google. Elgin auto-posts his Google Plus post to Facebook. Links in the Facebook version bring users back to Google Plus for pictures and comments. Today, he posted that users are now seeing a Norton security alert when they click on the links in Facebook. The notice states, "This link may not be safe." Apparently, something in the link is falling afoul of Norton's algorithm. Whether Facebook cares to try and fix this or not will be the interesting question to keep an eye on.
Speaking of Facebook, new research from ComScore suggests that if you are marketing products on Facebook, your sales should reflect an increase. Fans of Starbucks were 38% more likely than other Facebook users to make a purchase within 4 weeks of seeing one of those Starbucks ads. Target saw a 21% lift in the same time frame.
PC World put together a list of some of the more interesting generic top-level domains applied for by companies we already knew about. LOL from Google. But are you ready for .app? Hey, Sarah Lane, how about .rocks? And for those of you who hate things, if you hate stuff, how about .sucks? Because that was applied
sucks.
For. You can get that. We'll find out which ones were approved by ICANN tomorrow, Wednesday, June 13th.
I kind of like .sucks SUX.
We should pull together for that one.
Yeah, twit.sucks.
Yeah. Just to protect it.
She's kind of cool.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know.
We're in on the joke.
Right. It's ironic. Bing continues to add nifty tweaks to their search results in an effort to get you to switch. Beginning Tuesday, Bing's search engine will feature Quickies. Q-W-I-K-I-S. These are machine-generated video presentations on reference topics attached to Wikipedia page results. When a Wikipedia entry is surfaced in search results, the searcher can click to watch a video that's auto-created around the topic in question.
Spokio, a company that scraped social media sites and other sources to compile profiles of consumers for potential employees, agreed to pay $800,000 under a settlement with the Federal Trade Commission, which accused the firm of misusing that data it collected. The deal marks the first time the FTC has addressed the sale of internet and social media data for employment screening purposes.
At a Microsoft Tech Ed keynote, Director of Program Management Linda Averett demonstrated Excel running on Windows RT. Microsoft called it a preview of Office 2013 RT, which previously carried the code name Office 15. So what did it look like? Well, it looked like Excel. It had columns and numbers and data. What did you expect, like a talking paperclip?
Yeah, the RT paperclip. Can we bring Clippy back? Blizzard is doing its best to clean up Diablo 3. That is a nightmare community. Get it? Because nightmare is...
I see what you did there.
They're trying to clean it up before they launch the real money auction house. Today, the game company brought out its mighty ban hammer, announcing that it recently suspended or banned several thousand Diablo 3 players, quote, for cheating and or using botting or hacking programs while playing. Also, if you survived the purge and want to use the real money auction house, Blizzard says you're going to need to use the Battle.net authenticator, not just a password. Got to have two-factor authentication for that to work. Let's take a break and thank our sponsor, ShareFile.com. If you need to share big files, whether they're huge reams of legal text or videos or just large documents of any kind, it's really tough to figure out how to send them over the internet, unless you've got a good solution like ShareFile. You got multiple attachments. You want to make sure they're confidential. This is for a business situation. We're not just going to throw it up on any old site that's out there. You need something professional. Use ShareFile by Citrix, like we do here at Twit. With ShareFile, you can send files of almost any size easily and securely. It integrates right into Outlook. So if you already use Outlook, it's just like sending an attachment in any email. But they're sent as a secure link, so that the person you can track to see when they're opened, you can password protect them, and you can access your own files from anywhere, your laptop, your tablet, or your smartphone, and get work done wherever you are. We use ShareFile to receive and send materials. It's a lifesaver when you've got huge things that you want to keep confidential and you want to have a reliable service that sends it, and it needs to be easy. You're not always dealing with tech-savvy people. They need to have a transparent way to open this stuff as well. To get you started, we have a special offer for our listeners of Tech News Today, a 30-day free trial plus double storage. Sign up today. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter our promo code TNT. Remember, visit ShareFile.com, type in that promo code to get double storage. That promo code is TNT. And we thank Citrix and ShareFile for their support of Tech News Today. All right, let's talk about some of these stories here. Let's start with the Verizon shared data plan today. Verizon's Share Everything plan goes live June 28th, as we mentioned. And we kind of had a long discussion wrapping our heads around it. What they're doing is saying you're going to pay for every device in your plan. So whether it's a single person with multiple devices or a family with a bunch of devices, each device has an access fee. So it's $40 for smartphones, $30 for basic phones. Those are like feature phones. $20 for your netbooks and your USB sticks and your MiFi type things. And $10 for tablets. Then that gets you unlimited voice and unlimited text. So it's just getting rid of minutes. No more minute plans, no more per text charges. Unlimited text and voice. But you pay for your data. And it starts at a gigabyte, $50. $60 for 2 gigabytes, on up to $100 for 10 gigabytes, and then I think it's something like $10 for every 2 gigabytes after that.
Makes perfect sense because data is where everyone's moving to.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people still talk on the phone quite a bit, and I understand that, but you have other options than using SMS texting plans, and you certainly have other options than talking. So it's like, let's stick them where they're going to use the most, where they're going to be the most, and that's data.
The big argument today is, am I going to get rooked by this, or is it actually going to be cheaper for me? And it all depends on who you are mm-hmm. and what kind of devices you have. I looked at it. We actually have two phones on AT&T, two tablets that don't have data plans, and a MiFi. And so I looked at it. I said, well, if we moved the two phones to Verizon, and then we continued to have the MiFi on Verizon, how much would this be? Currently, if we had the 700 anytime minute plan, because we don't really use our phones for calling, hardly ever.
But you don't use your phones for calling, but they don't have data plans?
No, they have data plans.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
No, I'm just saying, if we moved these to Verizon, and we had the 700 anytime minute plan, that'd be $70. Unlimited messaging would be an extra $30. Then one of the phones would need 5 gigabytes of data, which is what we have now. Another one, actually, has unlimited now, but we'd probably just do 5 gigabytes. And then 5 gigabytes on the MiFi would be a total of $250. Under this new plan, the new Verizon shared data plan, it would be $220. So it would save us $30 a month. Now, with AT&T combined with Verizon, it's about $250 right now. So it's about the same as if we moved the things to Verizon. Mm-hmm. So this new shared data plan would actually save me money.
I mean, I think I've seen other places run the numbers. And if you're like a single person, it might not be that case if you have one or two devices. Because, I mean, it seems like, I mean, time to time, I potentially giving up an unlimited data plan with another carrier, which I know a lot of people are holding on to and hoping that it never goes away as it continues to be grandfathered. But I mean, it's a good start. I don't know if this is enough data for me because I was looking at the numbers. And I'm thinking this probably wouldn't work for me because I use a tablet and it's got a data plan and it's way cheap compared to this thing. And it's Verizon's trying something new. I'm waiting for the other carriers to see what they're going to do as well because it's. It can be good if you run the numbers. And that's when I was trying Verizon's site and trying to build my own situation, I had to input a whole lot of data, not for their shared everything plan, but the other plans, because it took a whole lot more work. So they're not making it easy to try.
I wonder if that's maybe the benefit, if it's less about that you have to run numbers, because, yeah, that stinks that you've got to run some numbers, and I hate that. But I wonder if it's like the minutes number. It's not what. It's the what of the numbers that you run, right? So maybe this is designed to pull in users who are older or not yet smartphone consumers and maybe less sophisticated. They don't understand about the whole minutes thing. And if you just say no minutes, you're never going to go over this data plan. This package, that's it. One thing to remember.
I think the idea, though, is they want to start making their money off data. Because that's what everybody's using. That's the growth area. People aren't going for bigger and bigger voice plans. They're going for lower and lower voice plans. So make that unlimited because it doesn't matter anymore. I'm a little surprised they're giving up the text messaging thing. But okay, they just don't want to meter that anymore. And I guess they see the writing on the wall that people are using data plans to do their messaging rather than using text messaging. That's starting to happen. So you get your money out of them on data. What I don't know is how you figure this up so that you get the right amount of data. Because it can save you money if you pool all the data together. That's the idea. People say, why should I pay for a data plan for my iPad and a data plan for my Galaxy S3 and a data plan for my MiFi and a data plan for that USB stick? I just want one big bucket of bits. Okay, that's what Verizon's giving you. They're charging you separately for the devices, which is kind of annoying. But they are giving you one big bucket of bits. How do we decide how many bits we need?
Well, I mean, you know how many bits you need if you're diligent about paying attention. It's just you buy the plan that reflects your average usage.
Well, you got to go to the carrier and say, how many bits am I using? Do you show me that?
Right, if you're on unlimited, I guess. Right now, I've got a AT&T iPad that I'll hold on to forever because it is under an unlimited plan, at least for now. I'm knocking on wood that they haven't pulled that out from under me yet. And then a Verizon iPhone, so it's like, yeah, I don't like the idea of messing this up because I have a pretty good gig right now. But as soon as I get to the point where I have to say, okay, how much data am I actually using realistically? And can I make sure that I don't go over this? I don't think it would be too hard to figure out.
What does suck is that I have two phones on AT&T and one, they call it a jetpack device on Verizon. If I were to switch to I couldn't get a 5 gigabyte plan, by the way. The plans are all in even number increments. So I would have to go either step down to 4 gigabytes at $70 or go up to 6 gigabytes at $80. But either way, I'd also have to pay $20. So just to keep my MiFi, I would have to pay either $90 or $100 for the same plan that right now costs me $50. Now, Verizon isn't kicking me off. They're not making existing customers change their plans. If you have a plan right now, you get to keep that plan. But these share everything plans apply to every new account. So if you just want to have one device, it doesn't pay. They're sort of trying to push you towards having multiple devices because you save money. But that's essentially doubling the cost of having just one MiFi on Verizon.
This is confusing as hell.
Yeah, it is.
This feels very retro, like very back when we did have to pinch our minutes and be hyper, you know, do micromanagement. It's like a real time strategy game managing my cell phone account.
Yeah, these data charges are way too expensive. It's $50 for 1 gigabyte of shared data, no matter how many devices you have. Right,
it's
off the top.
It's a commodity.
Yeah, that's crazy. I pay $50 for my MiFi device already as it is.
Initially, I was bought into this because it seemed less confusing, and now I'm just baffled, and I'm thank goodness I'm grandfathered in on a plan that will eventually go away.
Yeah, I'm off contract and grandfathered, and I plan to try to stay that way as long as I can. Let's talk about some Facebook audience growth. We heard about that in the news fuse. What's the deal with these Comscore numbers, Sarah?
Well, they come from a few different angles. Like we talked about in the news fuse, people who are fans of a brand, you know, that they've said, I like this. So those sorts of brand updates are showing up in their news feed. Starbucks was an example of a brand that seems to be doing very well on Facebook. It's working for Facebook, and Comscore numbers have reflected that. But as All Things D points out, those are messages that Facebook users are sharing with each other.
So, in other words,
likes Starbucks is not something that Starbucks paid for.
Starbucks is seeing an uptick in consumption, people going and buying coffee at Starbucks when they see more Starbucks references in people's news feeds.
Yes, or if I'm interacting with the Starbucks brand saying, oh, cool.
Or liking the page.
Liking a page or commenting on maybe a photo that some Starbucks employee had uploaded. All that stuff. That stuff doesn't cost me anything.
Yeah,
it
Starbucks
doesn't
pay
Starbucks anything.
So Facebook's not making any money off that.
Not that. Now, of course, everyone likes to look at the example of General Motors, who announced before the Facebook IPO, in fact, right before the Facebook IPO, that they'd continue to be on Facebook. It wasn't that they had an issue with Facebook. They just weren't going to pay Facebook for ad space anymore. They had kind of, I don't know, done their own numbers and said, it makes more sense for us just to be active on Facebook. We'll still have the GM page, et cetera, but we're not actually going to be paying Facebook for ad space. So that's, in one way, it's like, hey, it's kind of nice that ads work organically on Facebook, but Facebook needs to have proven revenue models. Now, along with that, in the same Comscore study, Facebook's audience growth in the U.S. appears to be slowing. Now, it actually is up for the month of April. It was up 5% from a year earlier. So it's not as if it's going the other direction, but it's up a lot less than it was in that same time period a year before that.
Slowing down. It's acceleration.
No, in my opinion, it's slowing down because there are only a finite number of people on Earth. And so, hey, eventually we'll get to the last person and then a baby will be born and someone will die. And it's like you kind of get to the saturation market. What's interesting, though, is Facebook gets about half of its current revenue from the U.S. and from Canada. 7 out of 10 Americans using the internet in April visited Facebook. So it's safe to say that we're pretty much at a saturation point in a market where Facebook's getting a lot of money. Well, do they have to start doing things differently in order to target large markets, not only of people who aren't on Facebook yet, but of people who might potentially spend money that Facebook would reap the rewards of?
Yeah, I think, obviously they're not even close to having every single person on Earth have a Facebook account.
Right.
And they may never get there. That would be insane. But there is a saturation point, as you mentioned, of people who are likely to get a Facebook account, actually getting one and using it actively. And they may be reaching the saturation point for that in some countries. So their big growth opportunity is other countries. Countries like China, where they don't exist yet, and that has its own set of problems. Or countries like Brazil, where they have a huge growth opportunity because something like Orkut is more popular there. Or now Google Plus, I guess.
You know, hey, we're at saturation point in the U.S. We make money off U.S. Facebook users. How do we make more money off of U.S. Facebook users, which potentially changes the experience for all of us, those of us who are on Facebook anyway?
Well, I could explain a little bit about their actual iOS integration. Imagine that if you don't have a Facebook account, but you have an iPhone in the next version, you click, I'm going to share this other site I've never tried before. I mean, that sounds like a very unusual case. But, I mean, it's basically reaching places that they weren't before. I know that I've seen built-in services on phones where I'm going to try it out because it's one of the default options. Like, okay, let's see how that works. So maybe they can, I mean, it sounds weird to say that Facebook needs to bring awareness of their brand, but anywhere they can get, because they have applications for even feature phones, they're available on pretty much every device. And back to the whole advertising thing, what Facebook would have to do is, I would imagine, it costs GM money to have brand engagement on their pages, to get people to click like buttons, to get people to pay attention. If they can show that it's cheaper to advertise with Facebook than it is to run your own social media division, maybe that's where they can actually get more advertisers to give them money.
Dan, what do you think? Is Facebook slowing growth a concern for Facebook? Is it a concern for us? Do we care?
I don't know. I think it's inevitability, and that Sarah was very correct. That there, I mean, there's just a ceiling to the market and you, right? The potential customer of Facebook. What I think is really interesting is just the dichotomy between a company that operates at such massive scale, and that's very interesting in and of itself. Forget the IPO story, just a company that is touched by so many people on such a regular basis, now has to find revenue and opportunity in order in increments of or by orders of increments, right? Like they're so huge, they can only grow in these teeny, teeny amounts in different places.
All right. Apple had a Maps announcement as part of their WWDC keynote yesterday. Google had a big Maps press conference mm-hmm. the week before. Is GPS dead?
That's what Wired says. Wired ran an article saying that Apple and Google have just killed the dedicated portable GPS, citing the new Maps app and Google Navigator, which has been around for a while. And they describe GPS units as superfluous. That's a great, I love that word. Garmin made a statement to Wired, and they said, quote, "We think that there is a market for smartphone navigation apps, PNDs, which are personal navigation devices, and in-dash navigation systems, as each of these solutions has their own advantages and use case limitations, and ultimately it's up to the consumer to decide what they prefer," end quote. Now, the real question is that true? I mean, we're living in a world where we have smartphones and PCs and tablets, and they do have their own unique use case scenarios because not one device is going to take over the rest of them. But is this really more like the PDA MP3 player thing where you're like, yeah, those devices, they got subsumed by this or consumed by the smartphone?
Yeah, I think it's what the difference is you have multifunction devices in the case of a smartphone and a laptop and a tablet and a desktop that you don't have with GPS. GPS devices are single-use devices. And Garmin tried to make a phone, if you remember, mm-hmm. the Nuvi phone.
2009.
And it did right. not catch on. It took a long time to get to market. By the time it got to market, it was way behind the eight ball. Smartphones defeated PDAs because PDAs were without the ability to make calls. And that was a killer feature for smartphones at the beginning was, hey, we can make calls and do apps. So why would you buy something that can't do the call thing? But MP3 players, I think, are the direct analog. They're not dead. They're not a growth market by any stretch, though. And they're going to dwindle more and more into these little specialty devices and not be something that's really a big market that people want to take advantage of.
But the technology has to be a part of any smartphone or else the smartphone is sorely lacking.
Right. So GPS devices made by a Garmin or a TomTom, that's going away. Mm-hmm. GPS devices that are meant for hikers or orienteers, specialty devices, those will still be around. The way MP3 players, I think, will always be around for joggers. You know, people are like, I don't want to carry my smartphone with me. I just want a little thing like a Shuffle or something like that. Obviously GPS is not going away, but GPS-only devices, come on, dead. Well, D-E-D.
The thing is, I mean, Garmin makes like half their money on non-automotive things, not the dedicated devices. So when it comes to applications, with Garmin and TomTom, obviously TomTom is powering some of the iOS 6's maps. Mm-hmm. They need to keep continuing to make applications that make the stock apps look awful. Really, that's what they have to do. If they're going to continue this in this field, they have to understand that they don't need to make the hardware anymore, which is actually somewhat beneficial because some of the hardware I've used on GPS is awful. But if they can make an application that works better or has a better interface, that's way more important than, well, this personal, this little PND die. It doesn't really make a difference. As long as these companies can figure out, okay, this is the future, and they're not sticking to this idea that this is the way it's going to be. If they are willing to change, they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think the companies don't necessarily go away. Mm-hmm. TomTom obviously paid off because they're powering the app that Apple is putting in iOS 6. Dan, what do you think the future for GPS is?
It's exactly that. Again, the feature became a commodity and integrated with other devices that are simply more convenient for consumers to use. And I think that, you know, InDash is a great example of probably a commoditized use of GPS for a long time to come. But yeah, the niche is just like the MP3 player will be served for a long time. But anything that has an experience that's based on solely, you know, not the brand, not anything else, solely a feature will become commoditized and integrated if it's useful.
All right, we got a few more things to discuss. Let's take a break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small businesses that saves you time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users, including myself, and try the service free for 30 days of unlimited use at FreshBooks.com. Be sure to let them know you heard about it on Tech News Today as well. If you're in business for yourself, you want to get paid, but you don't have to go through all the pain and agony of tracking invoices, of typing them up, of making them look good. FreshBooks takes care of all of that. All you do is give them the information. And for each of your clients, you only have to give the information once. Then you just go in and say what the bill is for. And if you've got repeated billing, you can set that up so it's easy to do as well. They're like the collection agency. They handle sending the invoice. They handle reminding. They can even take the payments. They can take it by credit card. They can take it by PayPal. They can make sure checks get sent to you. They'll even print and mail invoices. If you have some old-fashioned clients, for $1.39 per invoice or less if you buy it in bulk, you got to try them out. And you can try them out right now for 30 days of unlimited use just by signing up at FreshBooks.com. And like I said, when they say, hey, where'd you hear about this? Choose the podcast, Tech News Today, and we thank FreshBooks for their support of the show. More stuff to discuss today, including malware. Interesting story from Technology Review, Tom Simonite writing that the antivirus era is over. Dwight Silverman followed this up on the Houston Chronicle blog as well. Very interesting, pointing out that Flame virus operated for 2 years without being flagged by any antivirus software. And Tom says, hey, is antivirus done? Now, Dwight and others point out, well, I think you still need antivirus sort of as a safety net. But this is a really good question. One of the quotes in Tom's article, Nicholas Kristen, researcher at Carnegie Mellon University, says, we need to move away from trying to build Maginot lines that look bulletproof but are actually easy to get around. Is antivirus a false sense of security? If something like Flame can be out there and exist and derivatives like Stuxnet?
Well, I think part of the problem is that you'll get companies saying things like, remember, update your antivirus software. And you hear that a lot. And I think that people who maybe aren't extremely familiar with how something like Flame can go undetected for a really long period of time doesn't realize that these aren't, I mean, it's sort of like, I don't know, wearing a motorcycle helmet. I mean, you're going to save your head, but you might still actually get really hurt if you're in some sort of an accident, to use a kind of weird analogy. But yeah, I think a lot of people aren't aware that antivirus, just having antivirus software isn't enough.
I mean, these are really sophisticated pieces of malware. I mean, when it comes to like script kiddies and a bunch of people are just trying to make money and trying to create a botnet, that kind of stuff, I think, you know, anti-malware software is still useful at that point. When you're talking about incredibly sophisticated parties.
But now this software is out there, and those script kiddies and the less sophisticated malware creators can rip off that code.
Then the antivirus companies are going to need to create something to handle that. And it's always it's the cat and mouse game, right? Once something's public, you got to figure out how can we stop it from happening again. I'm sure you're going to see now with better protection and whatever company antivirus or anti-malware. But I mean, as long as there are always sophisticated parties creating new things, you're going to have to keep going back and forth.
Yeah, but the point is antivirus the way to fight this? Dmitry Alperovich is CTO at a new company called CrowdStrike. He says, we need to focus on the shooter, not the gun. So don't go after the malware. Go after the people creating the malware. He says, the tactics, the human parts of the operation are the least scalable. Dan, How do we do that? Do you have any ideas on how we actually target the folks behind the malware instead of just the malware?
Well, I think, first of all, I think that the seatbelt or motorcycle helmet metaphor is very appropriate. We all know that it's not a 100% assurance, but it sure helps to continue to protect yourself. Second, I don't know. To answer your question, I don't know. What I can tell you from my perspective, and while I would love to be as technologically versed as many are, I have been talking with the UN and Marco Abizo, their head of cybersecurity, about this on you know, how do you target people? And in fact, the day before the David Sanger piece in the New York Times was released a few weeks ago, I asked him about you know, what do you do if you find out that this is state-sponsored? And I think that when we say, let's go after the people who are the originators of the virus, sometimes that becomes very, very difficult when there are state actors involved and when these state actors have specified enemies that are the targets of these. And I think that's the thing to be most aware of, that the general public was not the target of Flame or Stuxnet. It's not that we can't develop things just as sophisticated to target people, but we should evaluate each threat on who that threat is targeting and why and the actors behind it.
Well, I think what these folks are saying in Simonite's article is that's great and that's true and that's always going to be true, that the most sophisticated attacks will come from large organizations like that. But now that we have these sophisticated attacks coming from there, the smaller guys, the smaller fry, can learn how to do this too. And that's the really scary thing. And antivirus, sure, while it may still be necessary as a safety net, is less and less the thing that can keep us safe. Alperovich says, hacking back would be illegal, so don't do that. But there are measures you can take against people benefiting from your data that raise the business cost of the attackers. That's an interesting point. How can you make Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
That's a tactic being used right now by the intelligence community. I can tell you for a fact that I have people who work within intelligence, and they tell me exactly that. The more expensive, the more sophisticated we can push. It's not quite like the nuclear arms race where you can be assured that your competitor will have equal resources. You can push some stuff beyond the technological capability of your enemies.
And researchers at the University of California, San Diego showed off last year that income from most of the world's spam passes through three banks. So there are some choke points that you can apply pressure to as well. I think this is a great article. If you haven't checked it out, go read it, technologyreview.com. All right, let's finish off with a couple of e-commerce, e-pay, digital wallet type stories, starting with Sprint.
Yeah, Android Central got a hold of some slides that, if are real, detail Sprint's NFC-based Google Wallet competitor, basically. Now, of course, it would only be available on the Sprint network, but then again, Google Wallet isn't available on a whole lot of phones either.
I can think of two.
And I think
and they're only on Sprint.
Yeah. So, hey, you know, we're starting small, but this is Sprint's answer to Google Wallet. The Touch Wallet would be unlocked by entering a passcode. So this is sounding familiar. The phone is tapped on a credit card reader, then you get a list of your available credit cards to use. When your payment's complete, the wallet locks again. Now, the slides suggest, and maybe these are placeholders or maybe these are actually done deals, that Sprint is partnering with some big companies, McDonald's, Starbucks, Target, Macy's, big companies like that. We don't know anything about who their bank partners would be. We don't know anything about what the release date of this product would be.
We don't know a lot.
We don't know anything about the security of something like the Sprint Google Wallet, whatever it's going to be called. I mean, Google Wallet itself had some issues back in February where if a phone was unlocked, there was a vulnerability where a thief could get a hold of your PIN, even though supposedly if somebody steals your phone and they don't know your PIN, the Google Wallet will sort of shut down after five unsuccessful tries. So there's some history of this sort of thing making consumers nervous, obviously. But I think the bigger problem that Sprint has is all of its competitors. Visa is launching VMe in the UK, France, and Spain. American Express is joining ISIS with AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon out in the U.S. later this year. MasterCard's PayPass wallet is also coming to the U.S. later this year. PayPal Here is on the way.
And you're not just saying PayPal's Here. That's the name of the product.
PayPal Here. Yeah, in quotes.
Don't forget pay with Square.
Pay with Square is another. It doesn't really have one specific partner, but it certainly works with all credit cards. we're not going to use all of these. There is absolutely no way that if I have a Sprint phone, I say, well, I might use Sprint's Google Sprint's wallet. Then I've got Google wallet.
My particular credit card doesn't work so nicely with the Sprint wallet.
Yeah. So I wonder, I guess it's the sort of thing where this is an emerging market, seems very hot right now. So everybody's got to come out with their version, but who's going to succeed?
I mean, that really, I'm just thinking this depends on the partners. Like, you're listening to those partners. That's the big deal. When McDonald's started taking credit cards, that was kind of a big shift. If you can get the right partners and if the contracts don't have exclusive problems, that's the big issue. A lot of, I think ISIS is one of those conglomerations that stops other companies from stops its partners from getting other types of NFC payments, which is a weird thing, which means you're either going to use ISIS or nothing, which is kind of annoying. Mm-hmm. So, or
you can't offer ISIS and Sprint and Visa.
It's not like you're going to have one point of sale that has compatibility with hundreds of these things. And that's the issue. So if these companies can get together and say, look, we don't care which one wins. Just make sure that it can all work together. Because what's the end goal, right? They want you to spend money as fast as possible. Is that really what this is? You don't need to swipe a card. You want to make sure that you have authentication with your NFC device. If that's what they want, they have to make sure that all these devices can work on the same point of sale device. And that's something I think Sprint, they probably will allow because they want to be able to have this on all their phones. They want to be able to kind of sneak in. And
the whole idea is to make whatever's in your current wallet basically the same experience but easier. Right now, I can have all sorts of credit cards in my wallet, and I just use the one that I want to use. I mean, we need to figure out a virtual way to replicate that experience, or why is it easier?
That's why I like something like Pay with Square, because it doesn't lock me out of using any kind of credit card. And actually, PayPal here, same way. Mm-hmm. I can put any credit card into PayPal as a backing device and use PayPal. Whereas a lot of these others are like, well, we're not partners with your bank, so you can't put your credit card in here. And that's just a ridiculous way to operate something like this. Dan, what do you think?
POS vendors are salivating. You can see the attention turning to them, right, for integration.
Yeah. Here you can hear the dripping drool from the POS. POS, by the way, for those of you thinking something dirty, means point of sale. Not a piece
dirty for other reasons.
Dripping POS.
Yeah. The huge dripping POS.
Salivating.
PayPal, by the way, also in the news for partnering up with Comcast TiVo.
Right. PayPal is working with Comcast and TiVo to let TV viewers purchase items, donate money via a remote control as early as the fall. So if you saw an ad, you could purchase a good, you can get a coupon sent to you electronically, make a donation to a nonprofit or political campaign, or have info texted to your phone. So this is going to work on TiVo Premier for Tuna DVRs, and Comcast involvement right now is in the very early stages, according to Tony Werner, Comcast exec VP and CTO. Now, PayPal actually did a survey to find out, well, is anybody going to actually use this thing? And they found out that about 49% of cable subscribers are open to the idea of making purchases through their TV. I mean, what do we think of this kind of interactive ad that you're watching there, you're like, oh, you know what? I could use a coupon from Home Depot. I'm going to hit thumbs up.
Nope, not going to do it. Don't trust it.
Mm-mm.
Afraid I'd spend too much if I did trust it. Not going to use it. What about you, Sarah?
Yeah, not going to. I don't want to interact with ads ever.
But with the remote control instead of the, like, hold up the Shazam app now. That, to me, seems like I've seen that.
I won't do either.
They've tried this.
I hate those.
Well, I think I might actually use it. I'm just thinking, when do I actually get stuck watching live TV? That's when I end up using it. When I watch sports, those ads I can't get rid of. When it's DVR content, I don't care about the ads. Mm-hmm. But when it's live television, I might go, yeah, you know what? Maybe I do want to do that.
I can think of maybe 4 broadcasts a year where I'm like, you know, I'm kind of in it for the ads also. The whole thing is because maybe the stakes are really high, Super Bowl or Oscars or those sorts of like very large events where the ad quality is something that I might want to talk about the next day with my friends. But for the most part, don't want to interact with ads.
What do you guys think of the business move for TiVo, though? I mean, right now they've been pretty much living on a legal settlement.
Yeah.
They have patent settlements with, I think, Microsoft and a whole bunch of different companies. Correct me if I'm wrong. But
we didn't get Dan's opinion yet. Dan, would you use this?
I have never had a cable cord to cut. I've lived off my Roku for years. Absolutely not. I get it, especially when ads are hyper-targeted. Say, put us 10 years in the future and we have the AdSense of video that actually works, right? I think we'll all do it by just because it is so, it will be so ubiquitous. But man, I dread this.
What about
Aya's? This makes me feel old.
Wait, what about Aya's point that this is TiVo living off its trust fund of settling a bunch of intellectual property disputes?
I could see that. Yeah.
They gotta try something. It's either this or like make more DVRs that people aren't buying. Sorry, I love TiVo. I had a TiVo.
Absolutely right.
Let's fire up the randomizer, shall we?
Randomizer.
Wow, this was hugely popular on our subreddit today. A decades-long Civ 2 game, actually just one decade long. It's been going on for 10 years. Has been mired in nuclear war for 1,700 years. Reddit user Lycerius posted about it. He's basically been curious what was going to happen, and so he's kept the game going. The Vikings, the Celts, and the Americans are pretty much locked in an endless war where the engineers build roads for armies that get annihilated in the next turn by enemies and feed the military beast, meaning warring nations have no time to clear up swamps or nuclear fallout. So the polar ice has melted and the world is covered in radiation and muck.
But everyone's alive enough to keep building those bridges, I guess.
Just enough people, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's depressing.
What'd you say,
Dan?
What
an experiment.
It's awesome. Who didn't have endless Civ 2 games like that?
Yeah, but 1,700 years? Right, I mean, you got to admire the persistence of this guy.
Right, yeah.
He's asking fellow Redditors how he might move the game forward. The prevailing advice seems to be convert the nation to fundamentalism, which prevents further research. Right now, he's got theocracies and communists, but ensures no unhappy citizens and makes building produce money instead of happiness if he moves it to fundamentalism. He might be able to pull the world out yet.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take too many political lessons from this, but I was a big Civ 2 fans.
Fundamentalism isn't necessarily the answer, but it might be for him.
To 1,700 years of nuclear war? Maybe.
Maybe. Hey, what do we know?
Got a couple things on the calendar today.
Yeah, we do. Max Payne Mobile is coming to Android on June 14th, but you might not even care after tomorrow, because tomorrow is National Juggling Day and National Lobster Day.
Really scraping the barrel there.
Celebrate appropriately, people.
Slow calendar week, but I felt that the public needed to know about juggling and lobsters on the same day. You could juggle lobsters if you're really talented.
Things are better in incoming, though.
Incoming message.
Tony in Atlanta called us with some insight into why advertisers fear better tracking.
Hey guys, this is Tony from Atlanta. I was just listening to your show about Intel trying to start its own cable thing with more accurate ad information. The truth of the matter is I work alongside the ad industry. The truth of the matter is the entire industry is definitely afraid of more accurate ad reports, because all the way from the bottom, all the way to the top, people who are advertising are just getting reamed as far as what they're paying. So if they were to start to realize just how little their ads were actually good for, an entire industry would die. So, they're fighting that stuff pretty hard, which is why they love Nielsen, because they can just make stuff up. So anyways, love the show. Have a good day.
Bye. Tony's stating it in very extreme terms, but essentially I think he's right, which is the current system covers up a lot of mistakes and inaccuracies, and if all of a sudden everything gets more accurate.
Right.
I've heard that same reasoning applied to the collapse of the talk and news radio industry, which I sometimes work closely with, that their advertising rates using Arbitron for years were inflated, or allegedly inflated, and that when something like Google Analytics can track so much, let alone Chartbeat, you know, using the book Arbitron is just silly.
Arbitrary.
It's sample based, and you know that deflated the value of the industry, allegedly.
Right. We got some great emails. Brian is a fan of Britannica on Bing. He says, when I first heard about Britannica results in Bing from your show, I was surprised you responded, meh. This will absolutely affect the way I use the internet. I am giddy with anticipation. Essentially, he's a student, and he's looking forward to being able to access Britannica articles from a few key taps instead of having to pay for a subscription.
I'm glad to hear it, Brian. I was kind of mad about this. I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea, but it's nice to hear from someone who's like, do you know how much this is going to help me? This is awesome. So, thanks to Britannica. Claudia from Brazil also writes in and says, I don't know if you missed this update or maybe you had to cut it because of time constraints, but Dell updated their XPS line on Monday, introducing their new line of Ultrabooks with carbon fiber hull. They have 15 and 13-inch displays, solid drive technology. The cheapest is $999, U.S. dollars anyway, clearly intended to be a MacBook Air competitor. She also adds a link to where you can see more about these models.
These are
at Dell's website.
Great-looking Ultrabooks. What are you thinking, Dell? It's the beginning of WWDC.
Very weird timing. In fact, we were joking about that, where we were like, you don't really have to hunt around for too much more news because you'd have to be silly to get buried within all of the other news that's going to be happening for the next 24 to 48 hours.
These are nice laptops, carbon fiber. Absolutely. I mean, this is brilliant design, and they put it on the wrong day.
Well, Claudia from Brazil rides to the rescue. Thank you, Claudia, for letting us know about that. Because, no, I didn't see this. It got buried. Yesterday as well,
I didn't see it
unfortunately.
At all.
Last email from Steve. Power efficiency is the key to mobile, and Intel has been saying their next chips will be more efficient than ARM for as long as I can remember. Back as far as the Acorn Archimedes PC in 1987 in the UK, comparing Android multi-threading performance to Intel processors is meaningless, like comparing watching a video on YouTube to a Core i5 CPU. If Intel wants to play catch-up for another 25 years, they should keep spouting this kind of marketing rubbish, and they'll never be more than a footnote in mobile.
Well, we did ask for people who knew chip design to write in. There was, I think somebody on Twitter as well said that the multi-threading performance on Android is no different than the multi-threading performance in any version of Linux, so why would it be different on mobile? Sarah, you had an answer to that, though.
Well, a possible answer. From what Intel had described, it's the issue with, you know, on a desktop computer, you're not going to have power consumption limitations the way you would on a mobile device and specifically a smartphone.
So if you have an answer to Steve about this, by all means, send us an email, tnt@twit.tv, and submit stories in our Reddit or vote. Actually, voting up or down is even better. Technewstoday.reddit.com. It's the place we look to when we want to find out what folks in the audience want us to cover. Get in there and vote. Technewstoday.reddit.com. We thank everybody who works on that. All the moderators do a great job. They've made it look really, really good. It's awesome. Thank you, Dan Patterson, for joining us today. Always a pleasure. Tell folks what's going on at CoPoint.
We are making podcasts 5 days a week, launching a few shows over the next few weeks into the summer, and I'll be covering the presidential campaign with Jack Rice this at the very end of the summer, and returning to Darfur reporting from the war in September or October. So tons going on.
You got a bunch of shows on here now. This is great.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I mean, we're taking a very, very, like, open beta approach where, like, we produce 5 shows a week, one each day, and we kill what doesn't work. We run them in seasons. We kill what doesn't work, or we adjust it. We, you know, listen to the audience as much as possible. The biggest challenge is tightening everything up. I need to add, you know, license-free production and you know, getting the team to communicate. But, you know, we have five different teams of people making shows 5 days a week here at Some All CoPoint.
Check it out, KOPOINT.com. Yeah. Thank you all for joining us. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv. And you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with an all-new show, and Andy Anatko is our guest. See you then.